I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore Art Meets News, a new exhibit at the Indiana State Museum that focuses on the life and work of Pulitzer Prize-winning Hoosier photojournalist Bill Foley. We'll talk about Foley's career, his approach to visual storytelling, and the genesis of the museum exhibit. My guests will be Bill Foley himself and Indiana State Museum curators Catherine Gould and Mark Rushman. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about a new Indiana State Museum exhibit called Art Meets the News. It's about the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are Bill Foley himself and exhibit curators Catherine Gould and Mark Rushman. Welcome to all of you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. Well, I'm gonna start first. I'm gonna pitch this to either Catherine or to Mark. Tell me a little bit about what the exhibit is and what the inspiration was for it for the museum. Well, Mark's throwing it to you, Catherine. So I guess it's yours.
Okay. Well, the exhibit is looking at Bill's life as a professional photographer. Mark and I kind of came at this from two different directions. Him being our fine arts curator had the art perspective, and I'm a history background, so I came it from more of that perspective. And as we were going through everything, we realized we didn't want it just to be, throw some photographs up in the wall retrospective. We really wanted to give it a lot of context for what you were seeing. And so the exhibition really looks at Bill as a photographer, Bill as a journalist, and then also Bill as an artist. And we follow him as he was following the news through the Middle East in the 1970s and 1980s. We came to the exhibition, actually. Mark has known Bill for quite a while, and he actually brought the idea to the museum.
What prompted you to do that, Mark?
Well, as Catherine mentioned, I've known Bill for about a dozen years, we were introduced through a mutual artist friend. And this friend said, you've got to meet this guy. He's an incredible photographer, and he's got all these amazing stories. And I kind of filed that away, and Bill and I struck up a friendship. And then one day at the museum, we were doing a brainstorming session on possible exhibitions and what would be a good story and what the artifacts would be. And I pitched the idea for, we didn't know what the show would be called, but I just pitched the general idea of Bill Foley's life. And it went over very well. I mean, we could see a number of different angles that this would be popular from. And as Catherine mentioned, we have these wonderful vintage photographs. We have Bill's stories. We have a Hoosier that traveled the world and made a significant impact. And then he came home to Indiana and is teaching at Marion University. So it all added up to just a wonderful story, and the museum got fully behind it, and no one has been disappointed.
Bill, what was your reaction when they came to you and said, we want to do an exhibit? I would think you'd be flattered at some level, but also I'm not sure I'm quite a part of history yet.
No, well, I'm not dead yet. But no, I was very honored when they came to me and said, we'd like to do this. You know, it's always interesting when, you know, an artist wants to have his stuff in a museum, and they come to you and they say, we'd like to do this. You're a Hoosier. You're back in Indiana. And I was completely honored by this and just said, let's do this. You know,
and, you know, in terms of What does it feel like? Presumably you've seen the exhibition, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I mean, what feelings go through your mind when you walk through? I mean, it sounds like it's more than 40 years of your life that's
pretty much
reconstructed there.
Well, Mark and Catherine have done an amazing job of curating the show. We looked at thousands of pictures. And when I walked through the gallery yesterday for the first time and saw this whole thing with the gray walls and the dark ceilings and the light, it was just took my breath away. It really did. It's just a beautifully displayed set of work that the narrative makes sense. You know, I was also worried about, would this make sense on the walls? And it did, and it was really brilliant. They've done such a great job.
We are talking about a new exhibit at the Indiana State Museum called Art Meets News. It's about the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Mark or Catherine, either one of you, walk me through the exhibit right now. I mean, tell me what I'm going to see. Okay, Catherine's not doing to you, Mark, what you did to her.
All right.
She's tossing it to you. Okay.
You did such a good job, Catherine. I just hate to take the microphone out of your hands.
That's all right.
As you mentioned, it's an overview of about 40 years worth of Bill's life. We start off by talking about his days in southern Indiana. He's a Shortridge graduate, and then he went to IU in 1977. And we have images of him, images of his from his time down there working for the Daily Student, for the Courier Journal. And Bill was trying, I'll leave the story as to how he got into photography to him, but these are examples, a dozen or so examples of his earliest work that certainly provide the insight and a clue as to what's to come. So a person coming to the show is going, as I mentioned earlier, they're going to see vintage prints. Almost everything in the exhibition are the original prints done analog, images that Bill has created in the darkroom. Once he leaves southern Indiana, once he leaves Bloomington and works his way to the Middle East, you then go, year by year through important events in his life at that time. You know, we have images of Anwar Sadat, his coverage of Anwar Sadat's personal life, the unfortunate assassination. We have images of everyday Egypt. We didn't want this exhibition to be just about the doom and gloom and the war and everything else. Bill has done a wonderful job documenting everyday life, the people that he would see on his way to work, the people who lived in his neighborhoods, and he has those personal stories that go along with it. We then move into the turmoil in Beirut. We deal with the embassy bombings, the embassy bombing in 1983, and then the Marine barracks bombing later that year in 83. And again, Bill was front and center for all of these events, documenting it, sending him his images out across the AP to share with the rest of the world. In some cases, his photographs were the only documentation getting out at the time. We then move through some of the other conflicts in the Middle East. We finish up his work there with the Iran-Iraq War. And then after that, I think Bill had maybe had his fill of the Middle East and decided to move his base back to the States, first in New York, and then eventually back to Indiana. So Bill had this incredible run in the Middle East, again, front and center for some of the major world events, photographing world leaders, present for some of the most dramatic and tragic events that took place, certainly during the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. And then it finishes with his post-work, what we call his art years, and also his work in Hollywood. He was doing still photography for various TV productions and movie sets, over 27 feature movies. He was also doing work for various nonprofits, for publications, for annual reports and things like that. So a person coming in is going to see this rich cultural history by this Indiana icon now, and then and then as we finish the show, there's a section which I think a lot of people will maybe be a little bit surprised by, but hopefully they'll be informed as well. And it's the actual tools that Bill would have used as a photojournalist, again, shooting analog during those years. And it's his cameras, his press passes, his enlarger, the typewriter that he used to type out the captions for the AP prints. So it's this whole kind of step back in photography history that most people, I shouldn't say most, many people, you know, have, they're either not aware of or they've forgotten about it before the digital world. So I hope people will enjoy it. I think the museum staff has done a tremendous job. The curators get a lot of the credit, but the museum staff has done a wonderful job telling this story.
Bill, Mark sort of set you up here. Could you take me through the steps that led you first to want to become a photographer and then to become a photojournalist? I mean, there, right. You know, those are often thought of as the same thing, but they aren't precisely the same thing.
What happened to me? I discovered I was majoring in chemistry, and in spring break of my freshman year, in spring of 1974. I went to Adrian, Michigan to see a friend. That friend had a roommate who had a camera to sell. And I knew nothing about cameras or photography, really. So I bought this camera. It was a Hanimax Praktika Super TL, and it's in the show. Mm-hmm. And I started shooting pictures. I started shooting black and white. And then I started shooting portraits and doing some weddings. And then I said, well, what can I do with this? And then I got involved with, the idea of photojournalism, the idea of documenting stories, the idea of telling stories in a narrative format. And I started working for this Indiana Daily Student, then the yearbook, then stringing for AP, stringing for the Courier Journal, and just decided this was what I was going to do.
And what was it that spoke to you about storytelling through taking pictures?
Well, just the very idea of it is an idea that's always been a part of what I've enjoyed, the storytelling thing. And so I started looking at other photographers. I started looking like Gordon Parks, Alfred Eisenstadt, all these guys who were the icons of photography who'd done it long before I did it, Henry Carter Bresson, and just saw that what they were doing with their photography in the past and how they traveled with their cameras. And the idea of traveling has also been a big part of my life because I love to travel. And so I said, you can take this camera and make it your passport, mm-hmm. which is what I did.
Well, this question is going to sound kind of strange, but it's one that has always rattled in the back of my head ever since I interviewed another noted Indiana photographer, Darryl Jones, who objected to a phrase I just used, talking about taking pictures. You know, how do you describe what you do when you are photographing? For him, it was more about waiting for a moment and allowing it to resonate. You know, what is the process for you? What do you look for in a photograph?
Well, I look for the frame. I look for the frame. I look for what am I doing that day? What am I trying to say to an audience? What am I trying to say to myself? What am I documenting? So when I was working for AP and I was doing street stuff in Beirut or Cairo or Baghdad, I would look for the light and the composition and the frame. And when I look at taking pictures, I look at making pictures.
Making pictures is the
you know, you're making
the verb
picture.
You would use there,
because right. you're actually, you know, you're making a picture with intent. I'm always telling my students, make pictures with intent. Don't just aim your camera and say I'm a genius, you know, because in the digital world you can take all these pictures and there's no penalty, there's no cost involved, you know. So if you make it with intent, you're going to make better pictures.
And how did you go about when you make an attempt, you say you look for the light, sort of the composition. Right. How do you decide what the story is going to be?
Well, generally, if you're covering a story, the story is there. But if you're creating your own story, your own, like street pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I'm hitchhiking through Europe in 78, and I'm in Florence, and I say, what can I do in Florence? Let's look at tourists. So I did a whole thing on tourists in Florence. And then I saw the beggars in Florence and the gypsies. So I would just, like, take that for a frame, and I do a series on that. Or I do a series on, you know, something beautiful, you know, churches or the light or the streets. You know, I mean, you can't take a bad picture in Florence.
No.
You have to really work at it.
No.
And Cairo is the same thing. Cairo, it was an amazing, you know, overwhelming the noise and the smells of Cairo when I first got there in 70. It was just overwhelming.
We are talking about a new Indiana State Museum exhibit called Art Meets News. It's about the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. My guests are photojournalist Bill Foley and exhibit curators Catherine Gould and Mark Rushman. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about a new Indiana State Museum exhibit, Art Meets News, the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. Foley is here with us today, along with exhibit curators Catherine Gould and Mark Rushman. We were talking really about the process that you go through in making pictures, to use the proper verb. Probably ought to ask, you said travel was one of your passions. Walk me through the road that took you to the Middle East. What was the inspiration there?
Well, it really was sort of presented to me as would you like a job in Cairo? And I said, of course. So that's how I got to the Middle East. I wasn't really aware of the Middle East. I didn't know about many things in the Middle East that I now know about. But I was hitchhiking through Europe, and I went to London to talk to AP. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Horst Voss, who's a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, who ran the AP Vietnam Bureau for many years. And he was now the head of AP Europe and Middle East Operations. So I walked into his office, and I had a portfolio, and he looked at the portfolio. And he turns to me and says, would you like to go to Cairo and photograph Sadat?
That quick?
Yeah.
It was a lot easier to get a job in those days.
Yeah, it was. Well, it's a whole day. I'm telling you, I always tell my students it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, so I finished my little European tour. I went back to London, worked on the desk in London for a week, flew back to New York, worked on the desk in New York for a week and a half, flew back to London, then flew to Warsaw, Istanbul, and Cairo, landed in Cairo at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And that was the first time you'd been in Cairo,
yeah,
right? Yeah,
I'd never been in Cairo before.
Okay. So walk me through the process then of figuring out this story, this city well enough that you know how to tell its stories.
Well, the great thing about being hired with AP, there's the AP Bureau. Mm-hmm. So the AP news editor was American, and the bureau chief was a Lebanese, and the other writers are Armenian, Egyptian. And it was a great team. They all spoke, obviously great English. And they really helped me out. Lizette was adamant that I would learn Arabic. So she only spoke to me in Arabic. And as long as you knew the context of a conversation, you could pretty much figure it out. So my street Arabic became pretty good pretty quickly. I could say hello. I could get your name. I could get your age. And not screw it up too badly. But as far as the story goes, we had Sadat. We had the peace process, which is sort of an oxymoron these days. But so that's what we do. So we spent most of our time photographing Sadat, meeting with dignitaries, Egyptian officials, American officials, European officials, as this whole peace process ramped up. It was supposed to sign the Camp David thing in early 78, and it didn't get signed until 79. But that's what we did. And then we did feature stories. And one thing about Cairo or Egypt, there's just so many feature stories that are fascinating to people, from the camel markets to the souks to just the street life. I mean, Cairo is such a huge city, and it just keeps growing exponentially.
And how much of that, I mean, I know from my days as a newspaper reporter and writer, the photos are what we called the art often. Considered an afterthought. You sent the reporter out to get the story, and then an editor would bark out, have we got art with this?
Right.
And all of that. How much in terms of shaping the stories, how much influence were you able to exert at the beginning when you were starting? And I'm assuming that that grew considerably over time.
Well, the more you're aware of the story, the more you can drive it. And if I'm working with Nick Tatro and the others in the Bureau, we would get together and talk about various stories, a feature story on the Zeppelin or a feature story on tourism or a feature story on the boat people who were running the felucas. And then I would suggest pictures. And then I would say to them, I'm going to go do a little research. And then I'd come back and we'd sit down and we'd craft the story. So it was sort of like pretty much 50-50 almost.
And so it became a much more collaborative process.
Right.
What parts of your experience in Cairo did you enjoy the most?
Oh, it was all, just a wonderful experience. I mean, I think enjoying meeting Anwar Sadat, meeting his family, photographing the movers and the shakers and this whole peace process. That was really exciting to me. I met, Menachem Begin, all the American diplomats came through Cairo, and then Sadat. And then just the street stuff. There was just so many, the streets of Cairo are so alive, and you can make so many wonderful pictures that just tell a great story.
What was Sadat like?
Sadat was a very cerebral kind of guy, very thoughtful. Mm-hmm. He knew exactly what he was doing when it came to the media or when it came to foreign policy. One of the things I've always said about Sadat is, if you miss a picture, it wasn't his fault. Because he knew exactly what he was giving it. When I spent a day with him, alone with him and his family in 78, where there was the day they were supposed to sign Camp David, and they didn't. So I got to spend literally 7 hours with him and his family. Mm-hmm. So at the end of that day, I'm thinking to myself, these are some really amazing pictures. I said, okay, thank you so much, Mr. President. I have to go back to Cairo now. And he says, you must have lunch. And when Sadat says, you have lunch, by God, you're going to have lunch. So I had lunch with the security people. So that turned into a really great opportunity because now the security people know who I am. And now I've been, given the okay by Sadat. So when there are press conferences in the future, when they were throwing people out, I got a minute or two later.
With subjects like that, I mean, I've always found I've always been a word guy, a pencil in the nomenclature of the business as opposed to a shooter. And it's always struck me that photographers have to have a particular skill with their subjects and settings like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to establish a relationship of some intimacy and trust, but you also have to have the ability to get them to just forget you. That you are even there. How did you go about doing that?
Well, with Sadat, it was pretty easy because he was so already aware of the cameras. So on that particular day, we talked about December 17th, 78, he's got his grandkids, his daughter, and he knows exactly what these pictures are going to look like. Mm-hmm. And he literally just ignores me. Mm-hmm. The grandson ignores me, the daughter ignores me, because they're used to this. They've been in the limelight for so long, they've been photographed by TV crews and photographers, but now it's just one photographer, and it makes it easier because one photographer can much more easily blend into the woodwork, which is what I did. I'm very, I tend to be very quiet. If I'm not talking to you directly and we've already set up the frame for the day, I sort of step back and make my pictures and let you do what you're going to do.
So was it hard to get him, though, in an unguarded or revealing moment? Because that's somewhat the art of photography is catching a glimpse into more than the surface.
Oh, many pictures I've made of Sadat go beyond that, into deeper than just the surface. I think there's a couple of times in 78, 79, various travels with him where he sort of lets his guard down. He shows it in his face. He shows it in his body language, whether he's reacting to his subjects or his fellow politicians, whatever he's doing. And there's a sense you get of who this guy is.
I'm going to ask Mark and Catherine as curators. I mean, both from the visual, the arts aspect, and also from the historical aspect of those, I'm presuming that there are photos of Sadat in the exhibition. I haven't seen the exhibition yet. What do they say to you as a viewing experience? I'll start with Catherine on this one.
when I was looking at the photographs, a lot of my questions were the who, the what, the where, the when. Mm-hmm. You know, I really kind of zeroed in on the documentary aspect of the photographs. And so as we were going through, say, you know, 20 Sadat images, trying to narrow it down, that's kind of where my mind was going, where I think with Mark, as we were kind of shuffling through, he's kind of looking at, you know, kind of like what Bill did a lot in terms of composition and light and shadowing. And so I was just really fascinated with the story. And so I'm asking questions about what we're looking at, who are these people, what were you doing that day, and all of that. And so that's kind of where my interest fell with most of this. And beyond the Sadat stuff, I mean, just, you know, that he had mentioned the camel market, mm-hmm. you know, and the picture we have in the show to talk about that story. It's like, what is this guy doing for you? You know, was it a moment? And so I'm constantly asking questions, more the why, I think. And then, you know, Mark can speak to this, but he really would look at something and point out, you know, composition and light and shadowing and like that. So together, I think we kind of made the perfect curator for this, coming at it from both angles.
Mark.
As we mentioned earlier, you know, Bill would be taking multiple photographs of a particular subject. And in some cases, when we were in the studio, when the three of us were in the studio looking through these thousands of images, we might put out five or six different prints, vintage prints, of the exact same thing. And Bill and I would look at it and have the discussion about, you know, which is the best print here, you know, which was the most successful in the darkroom. It might be a matter of contrast. It might be focus. It might just be the presence of the piece. So that's really where, you know, my expertise mm-hmm. came in. But also, in some respects, I was kind of the editor on it. I was looking for not only, you know, the most dramatic shots and the ones that had certain information in it, but also I also wanted there to be a balance in the exhibition. We talked about images of war and tragedy and things that are very dramatic, but we also wanted to get the quiet moments, the stories of Egypt, of some of the individuals. I talked in a previous program about there's an image in there which is one of my favorite in the show. It's called The Garbage Girls, mm-hmm. and it's of these three little girls, probably 9, 10, 11 years old, and they're standing in a garbage heap. And when you first see this image, you know, you think, oh, how tragic. I mean, they're kind of tattered and so forth, and they're, you know, as the title of the piece would suggest, garbage girls. But as you stand and look at this picture and you spend time with it, which I think any quality photograph or any quality work, you know, you have to spend time with it and look at it and see what's really there. And you realize that these girls, it's not as tragic, and that two of them are looking directly at the camera or at the viewer, and they have a very, you know, stern look on their face, a look of confidence. And it's like, you know, don't pity me. And, mm-hmm. and then another one's looking away. But when you realize what the story is, Bill, and again, this goes back to Bill telling the stories that makes all the difference with this. And this is a group of people, a society of people who are actually the world's greatest recyclers. This whole group of people make their living recycling and reusing the materials that they find in the garbage heaps and in the city and so forth. And they've created this whole civilization around this particular activity. So it's that we're looking for in the exhibition. I'm looking for those types of images that are compelling and have maybe multiple meanings. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, on top of that, you just want the very best shot that you can find.
We are talking about a new Indiana State Museum exhibition called Art Meets News, the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what a listener named Shannon did and send us a tweet at WFYI. It says, per Mike Ahern's thoughts, Mike Ahern was our guest on Tuesday's show, what does Bill Foley think in terms of news perceptions today as opposed to, say, the 1970s? How has particularly the work of photojournalism changed?
Well, with changes, the digital revolution has made everything a lot faster. You know, the beauties of the analog era was a photographer or even a writer had to deal with the transmission quality and the transmission speed, which wasn't immediate. Mm-hmm. And there was a time where you could actually reflect on what you'd photographed or what you'd written about, and then maybe tweak that, maybe shape that, maybe make it make more sense, more context. A lot of stuff you see today, there's no context for it. A lot of stuff, there's pictures and there's words out there, but there's no frame for it. You know, and it really annoys me when you see a photograph and there's, you know, this, it's taken in Berlin or Beirut or Baghdad, and there's no real story for it. It's just a picture, whatever.
Well, and often it's not by a professional photographer. No. It's somebody who's pulled out the cell phone and just started clicking away.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure clicking is the right term anymore with that. So one of, obviously, you knew Sadat fairly well, had a relationship. How difficult was it when he was assassinated? I mean, you had two sets of obligations there in some ways, or at least multiple obligations.
Right. Well, you know, oftentimes what I've told people in the past is one goes on autopilot.
Yeah.
When one's faced with, you know, the death of Sadat, the death of Marines, the death of people at the embassy, you go on autopilot because you've got a job to do. You've got to tell this story to the world, and you can't worry about your own sensibilities. You know, so later on, then you can talk to your colleagues, and you can reflect on it, and you can go through it. Then you can deal with it. But at the moment, you've got to make the pictures.
And how long did it take you to arrive? I mean, that I know, as a journalist, I know exactly what you're talking about here, that you're sort of able to
transcend.
It's like at some point, the training is also about suspending moral judgment for a moment, or all of that. But it's not an effortless process to get to. How long did it take you to get to that point where you could sort of say, I'm not going to think about what Bill is feeling at the moment. I am going to think about how I serve this story.
Probably less time than you would think. Because once it decided that this was what photojournalism was like going to do, I simply said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And so when I was faced with, you know, Marine bombings and Sadat's assassinations and all these other things, I just was able to very quickly understand that I had a job to do and I didn't have to worry about my sensibilities.
How did you go about doing the job? I mean, what things did you choose to focus on? You know, parts of that story, because obviously you're telling a different kind of story than a pencil would have, you know, than a writer.
Sure.
You're trying to provide a sense of immediacy and take us into that story. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you look at the big picture, whether it's the Marine bombing or Sadat's assassination or the embassy bombing, and then you say, okay, how can I make the most dramatic, exciting pictures that can tell the story? You know, and you look for that. With the Marine bombing, which we got down there very shortly after it happened, it was just a smoking pile of rubble. And so then you go, well,
we probably ought to provide some context. Okay. There are likely our listeners who weren't alive then.
Probably.
I think we all were. It was a bombing in 1983, Marine barracks in Lebanon and Beirut. And I think, if memory serves me right, 241 Marines were killed.
Right. A truck bomb comes into the building and blows it up. And so that story, I knew a lot of Marines, and I'd spent a lot of time at the Marine base. It was like going to Little America. So when you get down there, you think, how many people did I know have died? And then you think of how many times you'd spent in that building overnight. So you look at, you know, the fact that you lucked out, you know, yet again. And then you look for how can I tell this story that's not, you know, it's going to make sense to people outside. And so when we first started the round, the PO officers corralled the press and sort of organized us and then started doing walk-arounds around the site. So on the first walk-around, I and a number of other photographers made the picture of the Black Marine being lifted from the rubble, the first survivor to come out of the rubble.
We are talking with photojournalist Bill Foley and Indiana State Museum curators Catherine Gould and Mark Rushman about a new exhibit at the Indiana State Museum. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about a new Indiana State Museum exhibit, Art Meets News, the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. My guests are Bill Foley and exhibit curators Catherine Gould and Mark Rushman. We haven't talked yet about how we've talked a lot about the stuff that people can see, but we haven't told them how they could go see these things, where they should do that, and how they should go about doing that. Catherine, would you get us started there?
Sure. The exhibition opens this Saturday, March 28th, and it runs through July 19th. We do have an opening reception this Friday evening from 6 to 8. Ticketing information can be found at our website, indianamuseum.org.
Go ahead and give that to them again.
Indianamuseum.org.
Okay. And the reception's from 6 to 8. What are the costs if people want to see the exhibition?
Our normal ticketing prices are $13 and $12.50 for seniors. The prices for the event Friday are $25 for members, $35 for non-members.
Okay, and they still can buy tickets to the reception, even though it is tomorrow night. We're only a little more than 24 mm-hmm. hours you away from it. Mark,
you can actually walk up and buy tickets the day of the event, the evening of the event. So.
Okay.
We make it as easy as possible.
Okay. And how much time, if people wanted to go see the exhibit, how much time should they allow to do it justice if they're planning an outing there, would you say?
Easily, probably an hour. It depends, I think, on how engaged you become in the photographs. There are going to be folks that walk around and look at the beautiful photographs, which is you know, a great way to experience. There's also a lot of narrative information. Mm-hmm. I wrote the script to kind of give context to a lot of what you're seeing, so you can learn a little bit about Sadat and the Shah of Iran and Lebanon and the Marines in Beirut. So if you're a reader, you could easily spend at least an hour in there.
And what do you hope? I'm going to ask this of all three of you. What do you hope that people who come to see the exhibit will take away from it? Bill, I'll start with you since it's your work.
Okay, one of the things that I hope people, well, with the current events in the Middle East and all the chaos and people reading about ISIS and Boko Haram and all these different things, I hope that they take away from this exhibit that we're all humans, we're all human beings, and that whether, you know, the news events are sound terrific and bad and terrible, you know, at the end of the day, we're all still human beings and we're not all terrible people.
Okay. Catherine?
Hopefully, maybe they can get out of it what I've gotten out of it, which is, number one, learning a lot about what's going on in the Middle East. I think people of a certain age are going to recognize a lot of the terms and the names and the events that we focus on. Some of them, for me, were kind of, I knew about them, but not a whole lot about them. So doing that research was really informative, particularly in light of what's going on today. But then also in kind of developing a greater appreciation for photography, working with both Bill and Mark, I've learned a lot about kind of looking at photographs a little bit differently, the notion of a photograph for news and a feature photograph, and kind of what are some of the differences in Bill's intentions in making both of those and some of the art stuff that Mark's been passing along to me throughout this. About, you know, composition and framing. Several times we, you know, get down to having to make a choice in or out on a particular photograph. And I would have my reasons for why or why not, and then Mark would have his.
So what would, in those, did beauty trump historical significance, or did it go the other way?
Usually we were looking kind of.
So I just exposed a fault line here.
Kind of like Bill, we were looking for okay. something that would continue that narrative. You know, if we're telling okay. the Sadat story, or if we're telling the Beirut story, and it would get down to, well, we've already got 8. You know, do we need 9 or 10 or stick at 8? And so usually Bill was the decider. You know, I would have my arguments and Mark would have his arguments, and whether one was in or out, and then we'd say, okay, Bill, you know, let us know.
So, oh, Bill, you choose among right, your yeah. children here.
right.
You decide
right.
which ones
who's
are your favorites.
Who's going to throw under the bus?
Yeah. Okay.
I'll say that no animals made it in, which I took a lot of grief for, but I had to draw the line somewhere. From my perspective, I'm going to go back to a point that you made, John, about now much of the news photography we see are not trained photographers or artists, but people who are just taking out their cell phone and clicking away and sending off, and things are published sometimes out of context, like Bill mentioned earlier. I think this exhibition is an opportunity for people to slow down a bit, really have an appreciation for Bill as an artist, as a photojournalist, and as a craftsman. As I mentioned earlier, many of these, well, all of these images were, you know, original works that Bill consciously printed. He was working from proof sheets, contact sheets, some people call them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much a decision that went into these selections. And these are, I think we've done a good job in selecting beautiful images, almost all black and white. There is some color here. But there's a richness and a depth to these images that I think from the beginning photography student to a seasoned veteran, I think they're going to have an appreciation for this work.
We are talking about a new Indiana State Museum exhibit, Art Meets News, the work of photojournalist Bill Foley. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So is there work here that, you know, up until now only Bill had seen? I mean, are there unpublished photos that you know?
Pretty much everything in the exhibit has been seen in some form or another in either editorial or in reports for nonprofits. There's there's two Albania pictures that have never been seen before. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened to me during this process is watching Mark and Catherine work was such an education for me, good to watch this curatorial process. You know, and how we
was that a little disquieting? I mean, to have your life's work kind of picked apart like that.
No, it was fascinating to me.
Okay.
Because they're both very good at what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're very, you know, articulate about why they like something or why they don't like something. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was a real education.
Okay. Which of the, you know, it sounds like you had to make some selections about which photos would go in and which ones would go out. Which photos of yours that, which children, as it were, to use the image, that you weren't able to include, do you wish could be part of it if there were more space and more time?
Well, I think there's a couple of images from, you know, Egypt and Lebanon and Iraq that I would have loved to have in the show. We had Catherine and I had a conversation once, and I was talking about all these pictures. Why don't we have all this? And he goes, we can't have everything on the wall. So once you understand that, it becomes easier to realize that there's a limit.
And what would, in terms of your criteria, I know, you know, we've figured out where Mark is coming from in this mm-hmm. process, where Catherine was. Since you had to go as sort of the arbiter mm-hmm. in this and make the decisions, what criteria did you use for making the choices?
Well, it depended on the photograph. Mainly I was looking at the quality of the print. You know, is the print...
So you were lining up with Mark then.
Yeah, well, I was like, I'm lining... You know, I've always lined up with the idea that the photograph's got to be, you know, an image that tells a story, and it tells a story, you know, well. You know, it can't be overexposed, it can't be badly printed, it can't be a piece of dirt. It's got to be really beautiful. And so that was my criteria. The contrast was there, the composition was there, the print was just had this great quality to it. You know, and there's such a difference in print quality. You know, most people won't understand the difference between, you know, a flat print and a contrasted print. Mm-hmm. But I do, and most people, artists wouldn't understand that.
Well, we probably, since you've set it up, probably ought to explain the difference so that people can go to the exhibit with a knowing eye, a more knowing eye.
Well, when I talk about the print quality, I'm talking about a print that just actually arrests the viewer. and mm-hmm. stops you in your tracks. Whether it's the garbage girls that Mark was talking about, mm-hmm. the ghost walk. There's a picture called the ghost walk of a guy in a galabeah crossing a street in the city of the dead in Cairo. And he's dark silhouette against this white background. And it looks like a ghost walk. And that photograph is beautifully printed, great detail in the shadows and light. And I think that picture is one of those pictures that stops people in their tracks.
Which photo do you hope people will see? I mean, I framed that question clumsily. What is the photo that you most hope they will see at this exhibit? If there's one, they've got to make a point and to say, stop and linger in front of this one.
Well, it all depends on where they're coming from. If they're coming from history, if they're coming from interest in the Middle East, if they're coming from art, those are three different qualifications. Mm-hmm. You know, overall, I would say look carefully at the Sadat work. Look carefully at the Marines. Look carefully at just the street work. You know, because there's so many pictures that say so many things. You know, if you're interested in foreign affairs, you can look at the hard news stuff. You can look at the Sadat and the Shah of Iran. You can look at the Beirut bombing and the embassy. And then you can look at the street stuff.
Yeah. Which photo do you take the most satisfaction from?
You know, I've been asked that question many times over the years. Which is your favorite picture? You know, and it's a really tough question. I'm torn between, there's so many pictures I love. I love the picture of Sadat kissing his grandson. I like the picture of Ghost Walk. But I must admit, the Garbage Girls has always been a favorite of mine. So it's just one of those pictures that grabs you.
Mark, which one do you hope people will linger in front of?
Well, I talked about Garbage Girls, so that would be an obvious choice for me. The Sadat, The Last Smile, certainly knowing the story behind that makes it that much more compelling. So that I think that will capture people as they move through it. I don't think you can avoid it. I won't steal yours, Catherine. but there's one in that same section of these two little girls. It turns out the girls are capturing my attention here in these photographs, but these two young girls are standing I think it's in Tripoli.
Yeah. It is Tripoli.
Tripoli.
Yeah. North Lebanon. Mm.
And it's this extremely surreal image of these two little girls standing on the shoreline eating candy apples while there's a fire raging in the distance. There's a burning oil well. And it looks so tragic when you first look at it. But it's one of those images that you just can't look away from. You know, it's almost like a wreck. You just have to look at it and study it, and there's something just arresting about this particular image. So, and there's a half a dozen other images I could talk about, but I'll let Catherine go ahead and talk about
it. All right, Catherine, yours.
My favorite is again, it's up in Tripoli. It's this image of this PLO fighter who's walking down a dirt road, and he looks to be maybe about 17, 18 mm-hmm. years old, and he's got a very large RPG rocket launcher on his shoulder. And when I see that, I think of some kid in the 80s walking down a street with a big boombox on his shoulder. I mean, that's kind of what he looks like to me, other than the fact that this is a rocket launcher. Because he's a young kid, there's a real casualness about him. Like he's just taking a stroll. But there's then also, I think, the contradiction of the fact that it is a rocket launcher and he's wearing a uniform. And in the background, you've got the burning Badawi refugee camps, these black billowing smoke coming up from it. So for information, you know, the context and what's in the image, it's terribly interesting. And then there's just the art side of what Bill was able to do in terms of, you know, you've got the bright sky with the black smoke, and then you can see the shadows from the sun coming in from the right side of the frame. And then he's half in light and half in dark. So from an art perspective, for me, it's like this perfect composition.
See, Mark, she was listening.
Yes.
But yeah. I'm just, my mind just kind of goes back and forth between the casualness and then the brutality of what you're seeing all at once.
And Bill, I've got a lot of the photos we've talked about in this hour have been moments of high drama and really intense circumstances. As Mark established early on, you also did a lot of feature photography. You've done work in Hollywood. You've done other things. Is it the same to you? Do you have a preference for doing those moments of high drama as opposed to, you know, kind of portraiture? Or are they different kinds of satisfactions?
It's a completely different satisfaction. You know, whether you're doing, you know, high adrenaline photojournalism or you're doing, you know, slower stuff for a nonprofit with kids in North Carolina, it's a completely different animal. It's a completely different way you react to it.
Yeah. And in terms of the work you, I mean, because I have been around the business, there are times you can almost get kind of addicted to the adrenaline of right. big news stories right. and all of that. Did you have some difficulty leaving that behind?
I guess a little bit, because there is something about that adrenaline is a wonderful thing. But you can't do it forever. You can't always, you know, live on the edge. You know, mm-hmm. which is what I did for a long time. But up until the mid-90s, when I was covering intifadas and guys in the West Bank, which is sort of when I really sort of pulled back from the whole bang-bang stuff.
What prompted you to pull back?
Well, it was a couple of things. The business was changing. The editorial side was changing in a big way with magazines. So I was basically focusing on working for nonprofits at that point. And then it became easier when I moved back to when I was in New York. It sort of, you know, the business sort of changed. And so it wasn't so hard to sort of back away from it.
Do you miss it?
Yeah, I'm not going to say I don't miss it. I'm going to say I wouldn't do it again. I mean, I'm going to say if somebody called and said, we want you to go photograph, you know, a refugee camp in, you know, wherever, I wouldn't probably say no at this point.
You would say no?
I wouldn't say no.
You would not say
yeah.
no. Okay. So you, at some level, there is a part of you that would like to get back into the game.
Oh, sure. You always want to get back in the game.
And have yeah. one. Well, we ought to talk, leave people with, since we're getting close on time here, once again, where they can go to get tickets, and both for the reception tomorrow night and the public exhibition that starts on Saturday, right?
Yep. Opens Saturday, March 28th and runs through July 19th. And you can get ticketing and pricing information at our website, indianamuseum.org.
Okay. And if I remember correctly, the ticket prices for the reception, 25 for
members? 25 for members, 35 for non-members.
And for seeing the exhibition, it is?
General admission ticket is $13.
And $12.50 for senior citizens, right?
Yes.
And then children, I believe it's $8.50.
Okay. Well, I would like to thank all three of you. I've really enjoyed hearing about this. Bill, I've enjoyed talking with you about your experience. And I would like to invite our listeners to join us again on Tuesday when we're going to be talking about the career of John Bartlow Martin. Ray Boomhauer has written a splendid new book on it. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.